This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Portland, where the time is now 8:02. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show, hosted by Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today's topic will be the Keystone XL Pipeline Project, an environmental disaster about to unfold before our very eyes. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Raven's Flight Creative, presenting an evening with author, comedian, inventor, and mustache enthusiast John Hodgman from The Daily Show. John Hodgman speaks at the Baghdad Theater Thursday, March 7th at 7 p.m. The Baghdad Theater is located at 3702 Southeast Hawthorne, and accompanied minors are welcome. You can get tickets at cascadetickets.com. This KBOO program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Steve Miller Band, playing Portland's Edgefield and Bend's Les Schwab Amphitheater this summer. Steve Miller Band tickets are available now at ticketfly.com. Pink Martini will also be playing both venues this summer.
I don't know what they're so upset about. You're supposed to pay paradise. It's capitalism, man.
Well, yeah, really. And what is grass? What is trees? You can put them in little farms and grow them, you know.
Yeah, and where are you going to park your car if you don't have a parking
lot? Joni Mitchell, old hippie, you know, what the hell.
Yeah, who cares?
Yeah, really. Yeah. Are we ready to seriously get going here?
Yeah, it's not in my backyard.
Oh, yeah, not in our backyard, and it's not a planet. It's just an infinite variety of opportunities to make money.
It is a source of resources for extraction. That's all it is.
If you're lost, you ought to know where you are. You're at KBOO, 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with Abe Proctor and me, Joe Uris. Number to call to talk is 231-8187. I want to say one thing. We get complaints about how we talk too much and you don't get to talk enough. And I have to say, too bad. I mean, really.
Responsive to the listenership.
Ever responsive, ever sympathetic, ever concerned. We're going to talk about something really serious and scary. What is that, Abe?
It's called the Keystone XL Pipeline. You've probably heard of it.
I have heard of it, and this kind of opens up a larger discussion of how all of the land, all of the uneffectively claimed land in the world is currently being bought up by huge corporations, some of them even Chinese.
Corporations are people, too.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like you have something against Chinese people. What's the matter with you? Chinese really? Corporations are people, too.
Yeah, they are. So I also want to thank the Food First people who provided a lot of the background or material for this conversation today, as well as the New York Times, which on the business page, with a right-hand headline over the top of the fold, on Monday, talked about the Keystone Pipeline. But also, have you noticed how the major media outlets have not covered the huge demonstrations taking place in D.C. and elsewhere, and the arrests of many notables, including many scientists, on the issue of climate change?
Robert F. Kennedy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the hell with him. His dad's dead.
Well, yeah, he was just arrested, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a radio host, too, you know.
I know.
Yeah, a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We want to hear your opinions on this project today. Is it necessary for the United States to build yet another massive pipeline to bring Canadian tar oil into the United States?
Wait a minute. What do you mean yet another?
Well, there's another. There's many. What we know is the Keystone Pipeline already exists. Let's start by explaining what the Alberta tar sands are.
Go for it.
All right. The Alberta tar sands is a deposit of bitumen. I think I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah.
Bitumen-rich sands located on the river on a river valley, the Athabasca, in Alberta in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
This is the only viable source of tar sand oil in the world. The only one that's close enough to the surface to be mined at a profit, essentially.
Right, but in order to mine it?
In order to mine it, it's not very efficient compared to, say, the oil you get from Saudi Arabia.
Uh-huh.
This is bitumen. This is very dense, almost solid, very thick, very tarry crude oil.
Uh-huh.
That in order to be extracted from the sands in which it's found, massive amounts of other resources have to be brought in, including lots and lots of fresh water. The runoff from this process is incredibly toxic, and it's stored in essentially earthen berms. Just left in the open air.
Well, and also I understand that there's an enormous amount of carbon dioxide and other climate poisonous chemicals released into the air.
Yeah. This, is, as I mentioned, is not a very profitable method of petroleum extraction.
But it's Canada's new big source of wealth.
It's Canada's new big source of wealth, indeed. And it should be noted at this point that Canada comprises our main source of foreign oil. Not the OPEC countries, as you might suspect.
Oh.
Not the Mideast, not Venezuela, but Canada.
And Canada has now a hyper-ultra-conservative government?
Canada has a pretty conservative government. The provincial government in Alberta, and the provincial governments in Canada enjoy a lot more autonomy from the national government than our states do from our national government. They're, of course, all about this, because it's been boom times in Alberta now for about the past 10 years or so.
I can't believe. So they want to build this pipeline, presumably, because it'll be more of an express route?
More of an express route. It's a bigger one than the one that already exists. Now, the one that already exists is called the Keystone Pipeline. So you might ask yourself, why build another one? The one that exists originates in Hardisty, Alberta. It travels south for a little while to the Alberta-Saskatchewan border. This is due north of Montana.
Uh-huh.
Then it takes almost a right-angle turn and heads just south of due east, across Saskatchewan, into Manitoba. Now we're above North Dakota.
Okay.
It takes another right-angle turn and heads south straight to a place called Steel City, Nebraska, which is right on the Nebraska-Kansas border. And from there, it connects with some existing pipeline networks in the United States, finds its way to refineries both inland and on the Gulf Coast.
So in other words, this is just another way to move this nasty, really nasty oil.
Yes.
To the Gulf Coast, where it can be refined.
Indeed. Refined and accessed by American markets, more importantly. Now, the Keystone XL, essentially, I described this big right angle, a couple right angle turns that the existing pipeline makes. This would just basically take a diagonal off that section of the square, as it were, take a more direct route from Alberta straight to Steel City, Nebraska. The problem is it runs through a seismically active region that had a 5.0 earthquake as recently as 2002. It heads directly through the Ogallala Aquifer, which provides fresh water for millions of people and about $20 billion worth of agriculture every year. And it passes through several very delicate ecosystems, most notably the Sand Hills region of Nebraska.
So this is about essentially about the profit of oil companies, and it is to the advantage of working people who have nothing else, no other jobs available except to work in the oil industry.
Well, that's how it's being framed.
Okay.
But I would say with a little creativity and perhaps a little initial investment by the government, you could come up with some other jobs for people to work. I wish we had an irony alert buzzer or like a bell we could ring every time we said something.
Well, let's get one.
All right.
Maybe somebody will send us a bell.
Maybe they will. Okay, so imagine
the bell from hell.
Imagine the irony bell ringing right now. Ding, ding, ding. This pipeline project is being sold by Republicans as a jobs program.
Of course.
Of course.
Of course.
Interesting how the Republicans get really behind stuff when it has to do with either defense or oil production. Then it's a great jobs program that'll put people to work. But if perhaps the government were to propose investing in I don't know, solar farms instead
or
of
high speed rail,
or high speed rail, or fiber optics,
or new bridges,
or wind farms, or new bridges. Well, that's just big government trying to tax you and spend your money.
Oh my! Oh my! Oh my! I want to insert a whole other thing here.
Okay,
I have been asked, and I'm very honored to do it. I've been asked to talk on a panel this weekend in Astoria for the Fisher Poets Festival, which is a very cool event. It's a poetry reading and presentation thing. It goes on all weekend in Astoria at many locations, and it is the poets who are actually people who fish the seas.
Hmm.
And it's a real thing. And I've been very honored to do that. I'll be talking, but there's so many good events. I'll be talking at 10:45 at the Maritime Museum in Astoria, along with other people more knowledgeable than I about fisheries. And my presentation will be about something that is very close to this conversation now, which is how the wealthy are buying up all the wild lands that they can in all of the world and holding on to that land with a view toward enormous potential profits in the near future, which is really happening everywhere. I mean, everywhere, including the United States.
All right, so when and where is this again?
This is Friday through Sunday in Astoria. The event I'm involved in starts at 10:45 at the Maritime Museum there, which is a cool museum, actually.
Hmm.
And, you know, the Maritime Museum is an interesting thing politically. When I went there many, many years ago, it was a smaller space. They had these boxes that salmon were shipped in that said, product is packed by white people.
Oh, interesting.
Those boxes, I haven't seen them on display in a long time.
Yeah, because I only eat the white people salmon.
Yeah, white people salmon. That's a tremendous difference.
Yeah, the other stuff tastes funny.
Well, of course, that's racism, and it's a way of approaching one of the big issues, I think, that's always important, is how capital turns one ethnic group against another. And this is a great example that I wish they'd kept the boxes. But I think sensitivities were such that they took them away.
That should have stolen one.
I should have stolen one.
All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. We'd like to hear your thoughts about, first of all, this pipeline project and what you think of it. And secondly, about the larger theme that Joe outlined just a moment ago, about how the earth seems to be, in the minds of global capitalism, simply a repository of resources to be extracted and exploited.
Yes, and I want to thank the people at Food First who put out these regular bulletins on this kind of stuff. They keep me informed, and I think if you're interested, Food First is a good resource in nonprofit world.
Yeah, I like food.
And you like it first?
I eat it every day.
But do you eat it first?
Oh, yeah.
Never mind.
All right, Engineer Steve brings up a good point. The tar sands oil that's currently being piped in the United States and refined in mostly along the Gulf Coast and in interior regions close to there is not just meant for American markets, but it's exported.
Oh, yeah.
To world markets.
Yes.
This is very much in the global capitalist framework that we're describing.
And remember that the Panama Canal is, even as we speak, being enlarged to allow bigger oil tankers to go through it.
Well, that's very important.
Yeah.
Well, we need oil, Joe. What's your problem? Why do you oppose this?
Oh, because it's a disaster environmentally.
What if they can make it safe? Come on now. This is the 21st century. We can build a safe pipeline.
Wait a minute. Have we never had pipeline accidents?
Hardly ever.
Can you give us some examples of hardly ever?
Okay. Well, for example, in the 20-year period from 1990 through 2000 in the United States, there were a mere 5,626 pipeline accidents.
Wait. 5,000?
Right. 5,626. That's not very many.
Yeah, rounding it to 6,000.
Right, exactly. Only 365 people died.
Oh.
Right. And only 1,553 additional people were injured. See? No big deal.
Well, what about the environmental impact of all that oil spilling?
No, I'm sorry. I only think about, bottom line stuff. How many people died? How much money it costs? How much oil was lost?
Well, wasn't there recently one that polluted the major waterways of the Mississippi?
It was up north in Michigan, I believe. Yeah. I don't know if that was a tributary of the Mississippi or not.
I think
but
so.
That was the most recent. Ypsilanti River.
I believe Ypsilanti River flows into the, I forget which one, and then on into the Mississippi.
And on flowing, you know.
And the thing about rivers is they all flow, you know, into other rivers, which flow into other rivers, which flow to the sea.
Now,
see?
This, the no pipelines have been around for a long time. We have an enormous network of them, even in this part of the country here. They carry everything from crude oil to heating oil to gasoline to natural gas to you name it.
Yeah,
we have these networks all over the place. You know, there are no gas refineries, oil refineries in the state of Oregon. All of the gasoline that's dispensed here arrives in Oregon by way of pipeline. A lot of people don't know that. And there are accidents on these things all the time. There's so many variables involved in manufacturing and maintaining a gigantic pipeline. There's just so many things that can go wrong. And in the presence of either a large natural or man-made disaster, an earthquake, for example, the potential for mass destruction is huge. So we're talking about building essentially the largest volume pipeline that this country has ever seen to pump this nasty, dirty oil into the country through a seismically active region, through a major aquifer, through several very delicate, very unique ecosystems.
Yeah, now last
Something will go wrong.
Yeah, now last weekend there was these big demos in D.C. on this issue. Barely covered by the media, I thought, and with arrests of major figures in the science and famous people of the world. And Obama, you know, held back on authorizing this thing prior to his election. So the big question in my mind would be Obama, who I now believe to be really kind of chicken. Well, will he approve this one under pressure of the oil industry and the Republican Party and some Democrats and, of course, the Canadians?
I think he probably will.
Oh, I know. Surely he will.
He delayed his decision last year till after the election because he knew that he would pay a political price regardless of what he decided. The environmental community largely got behind him, and he couldn't afford to lose that vote leading up to November of last year. So he kicked this can down the road. And now I think that the election is safely behind him. He'll probably get behind it. Earlier in his first term, he stood in the southern United States, in Kansas, I believe, and in front of a huge stack of pipes and other pipeline gear, and said that the Gulf Coast section of this Keystone XL pipeline was a priority for his administration. And that portion has already been built.
So it's so is it a dumb deal?
It would appear to be so, yes.
Well,
If I were a betting man, I'd say, yeah, this is going to get the green light from the
This is so disturbing. So disgusting. So very disgusting. You know, one of the odd things about all of this, of course, is there are enormous conflicts between, for example, the fisher folk, people who fish, and the extraction and other forms of extraction industries, like the people who want to go into Alaska and tear up the salmon runs and put in enormous extraction mines for copper and gold. So the only fight that seems to be going on is between one extraction industry versus another. The advantage, of course, of salmon is if it's extracted appropriately, it's renewable. Whereas copper and gold, when it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah,
hey,
I'll still only eat if it's packed by white people.
Okay, 231-8187, want to hear from you.
Who's up, Steve? All right, we'll get to the phones in just a second.
Harvey!
Good morning.
Hi, Harv.
Hey, how are you doing today?
Pretty good.
Fine, thanks.
Great. Well, I'd like to discuss both things. Well, first of all, the pipeline, it's rape and pillage of the Canadian arboreal forest. If you go to Google World, and you look up the, go to the Alberta tar sands, it's like the moon. It's like desolate. It's like they raped. It's like a dead thing, and it's a terrible thing they've done to the Canadian forest. All the life, the decimation of so much life, so much beautiful life, all for the profits for the few. When we can get star powered instead of living off the fossil fuel, instead of living off all the dead fuels, the coal, the oil, the natural gas, the nuclear. We could be star powered, but they're reluctant to let go, you know, especially in the capitalist system. And as far as the way, you know, you talked about the way the corporations are, they're essentially the corporations, which are multinational now, use the local politicians as a lubricant to get their way. And I remember when they had the BP oil spill.
Ah, yes.
One of the executives came on and said, he was asked about all the people who are damaged. And he says, well, don't worry about the little people. We'll take care of them. He used the word little people, and that should be very, and that should stick in people's minds, because the corporations, the guys at the top, what they call the corporate elite, they think of us as the next step down in evolution. They are the next step up, and we are the little people to be used by them in their plans of world domination. And right now at the TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the 600 corporations are divvying up the world, and you're involved too, because they want to put coal, they want to put trains of coal through your ports, so the coal goes to China. That's a Trans-Pacific Partnership. But this partnership will also allow them, the corporations of the world, to buy up local, like the commons. You know, if you own a local power plant or something, they can buy it from you. It's all kinds of stuff like that, and the Congress isn't allowed to see the plan. So this is the next rape of the, you know, after.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the coal, because talking about coal reminds me about the destruction of all the mountains in Appalachia just to extract coal.
You know what? You know what's funny? You know that Warren Buffett there, he owns all these companies, but he's burning the candle at both ends. He owns the Santa Fe Burlington Railroad, which delivers all the coal to the power plants across America. But at the same time, he also owns these insurance companies who are paying out for environmental disasters an incredible amount. They've never paid out like that. So one of his companies is causing all the environmental disasters, and the other company is trying to cover them. So it's going to be a battle, I think, in the future between the insurers who are losing their shirts over environmental disasters and those who are producing the disasters. But we're caught in the middle here, and I say we go star-powered as fast as possible.
By which you mean sun, the use of the sun?
Yes, plug
like
into
that.
The sun. Let's get solar, photovoltaics. And another thing about photovoltaics is they don't use any water. You know, the warming of the oceans is taking place, and the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant right here, right down the coast there, it uses 2.5 billion, that's with a B, gallons of water a day to cool the reactor. And in doing so, so there's thousands of coal-fired oil, natural gas, and nuclear power plants that are called once-through plants, where they pull in the water from the oceans, lakes, and rivers, and they put it through the plant, and then the water is expelled back into the ocean, lakes, and rivers at 20 to 30 degrees hotter. So these plants collectively, thousands and thousands of these plants around the world, are heating up the ocean, and when the ocean waters are heated, they expand, so we get ocean rise. I mean, in every way, we have to move away from these terrible forms of power, the fossil fuels. They're killing us. And so I say, let's get star-powered, let's get solar if we want to save our planet. Because
thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank
you very
much.
Thank you
for the call.
Yeah,
thank
it's
you.
A good
star-powered,
call.
I really like that.
I like that term, star-powered. I'm going to remember that.
Yeah, I keep imagining.
It's kind of cool. It's got a sci-fi feel to it.
Yeah, kind of imagine like a, you know, an extension cord coming off of Barbara Streisand, and she's singing and powering the nation.
All right. Never mind.
503-231-8187.
We're talking about the XL pipeline.
I wish I had an irony bell again.
Irony bell. Bing,
because
bing.
Tom Hartman, people know who Tom Hartman is.
Yeah, Tom Hartman.
Portland guy, used to host a show on KPOJ before someone pulled the plug on that station. He wrote a wonderful book called The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight about fossil fuels, mm-hmm. because that's what it really is in reality. This organic matter that has decayed under the earth for millions of years,
yeah.
Was originally fueled by the sun. So when we burn gasoline, we're burning ancient solar power. All right.
Let's get some more callers. 231-8187. Again, we're talking about the environmental disasters implicitly symbolized and realized by the XL pipeline going through the United States to the Gulf ports from Canada, from the tar sands, which are the filthiest source of oil ever.
Who do we have, Steve? Barth, good morning, sir.
Good morning. The Barbara Streisand analogy was really annoyingly weird.
Good.
Yeah, that was
good.
Very strange. I agree. That's
anyway.
My partner here.
Yes. Joe commented about fish boxes. It's white clams packed by white labor. I have one of those boxes.
Oh, you do have one.
I do. I found it at a little secondhand store at the beach, you know, 15 years ago.
Yeah,
and I said,
people
wow,
wouldn't believe the degree of racism that was implicit in the struggles of earlier industrialism, but that's a good example of that.
Indeed. The last caller brought up a bunch of good stuff. The throughput of nuclear power plants for cooling water is what makes them so very dangerous when the power goes out. If there's nothing to pump the 30 billion gallons of water a day or a month or whatever the interval is, then the plants melt down.
Right, just like what happened in Japan.
Well, and what is still happening in Japan, let us not forget. It's not
right.
over yet.
No, you're absolutely right.
The Koch brothers et al., they spoke about them on Amy Goodman's show this morning, about how they and their brethren, which we must say are mostly male, have funded a large organization to put out denial pseudoscience, which is then picked up by, you know, semi-legitimate and legitimate news outlets and broadcast as news.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. And I want to just emphasize something that since you brought this up. There was so little coverage in mainstream media of this huge demo in Washington, D.C., which included, as I say, the arrest of many notables in the world of science and entertainment and politics. And I just feel at this point that there is, how shall I put it, the fix is in?
Well, certainly the consolidation of the media, which, you know, people have been barking about for years, and KBOO is a wonderful antidote to locally, means that money equals power. And since one of the major networks is the owner of GE, there's no anti-nuclear sentiment ever.
Right, NBC, GE, who could forget?
Yeah, I mean, and so if, what is it, six or eight major holding companies are the media outlet in this country, so that's a lot of money going into the same pockets. And if you make your money selling coal or moving coal or making chemicals out of coal or, you know, buying oil pipelines or building oil pipelines or, you know, selling gasoline, whatever it is that's in the fossil fuel infrastructure.
Yeah, I'm actually going to ask you to get off, not because you're not making
fair
wonderful
enough,
points, but your phone is breaking up.
I'm sorry about that. I've tried
no
to do better.
Not your fault, man. Thank you very much for the call.
You bet. Bye.
All right, 503-231-8187. I think it's appropriate to note that we talked about the president's seemingly conflicted stance on this issue.
Yeah.
He has been both publicly for it and against it.
Chicken.
But
he's
behind
chicken.
The scenes, his State Department has been very cozy with TransCanada, which is the petroleum company that wants to build this thing. The State Department allowed TransCanada to pay for and oversee an environmental study of its own pipeline, which concluded that there were minimal environmental risks.
Wait a minute. They studied their own pipeline and decided it was cool?
No, they hired somebody, paid for it themselves.
I see.
And this has become fairly common in the industry, and it's almost inevitable because due to the anti-regulatory position taken by Congress over the years, mostly by Republicans in Congress, there's not enough money for the government to conduct these studies itself.
Which are required by law.
Which are required by law. So inevitably, they have to turn, both industry and the government, have to turn to a third-party company to make this study.
Well,
and the only one with the resources to do it is inevitably industry.
Well, now, fortunately, when the BP oil spill occurred, it was all taken care of after a terrible time. But it's all over now, right?
No, that...
What?
That blown-out well, the well blew out at the base of the ocean. There are massive fissures and cracks all over the place, and it appears that this thing will go on leaking as long as there is oil to come out.
So when I buy the shrimp, I'm giving myself a good dose of petroleum?
Yeah. I wouldn't eat any Gulf Coast fish.
Oh, but I saw an ad on TV by BP about how all the food is so good.
Remember what I said about industry paying for its own environmental analysis? When industry pays for its own advertisements about how clean everything is, take that with a grain of salt as well.
Really?
503-231-8187. James, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I don't think I'd eat any fish that came from anywhere
near Japan or any fish that migrate from Japan from to anywhere else.
Yeah, I don't know the extent of the damage in the Pacific Ocean, and that doesn't mean that there isn't damage, and it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be more information about it, but curiously there's been very little in the news.
Right. Anyway, this is a very important issue. I think it's one where President Obama will really have to show his hand, you know, where he stands on climate change. But I think climate change, this whole issue really has to be coupled with the whole question of the Kyoto Protocol, because I think the issue there was really who on the planet is responsible for much of the climate change and who really has the obligation of paying for it,
mm-hmm.
and who is willing to maybe adjust their standard of living in order to address this ticking time bomb.
Well, yeah, and one of the ironies about all this, of course, is that appropriate technologies being developed have enormous employment potential and could create a situation where we are actually free of fossil fuels and extraction industries for heat and light and so on forever. So it's kind of an interesting reactionary situation of capital at this time. And I'm really glad you called. I think that these issues are fundamentally so significant, and we can't pay enough attention to them. And I notice how the media has tried to play them down or outright ignore them. Anyway, I'm really glad you called, man.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. 231-8187, you got some business to do?
I do. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, legendary MIT professor and author Noam Chomsky speaks
Troublemaker.
On the threat of democracy. Not the threat to democracy, but
the threat of democracy, as in maybe it doesn't exist?
No, I think he's talking about his concept of the threat of a good example.
Ah.
Like when we see, when somebody starts doing something better,
yes.
Usually the powers that be conspire to make sure that they don't succeed.
Ah.
Right. At 10 here, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features the weekly report on occupied Palestine from Nora Barrows Friedman. We also hear a speech on the case of Bradley Manning with Kevin Gostola, author of Truth and Consequences, the U.S. versus Bradley Manning. At 11, Stage and Studio presents a Black History Month documentary special called Justice Denied, which focuses on African-American history, including the fugitive slave trial of Anthony Burns. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Galavan interviews Modo Jiang and Devin A. Van Houten Maldonado. They are professor and student, respectively, at Pacific Northwest College of Art, and they have a show together at Linfield College in McMinnville. All this and more coming up today on KBOO.
I like KBOO.
I like KBOO too.
Yeah. All right. We're talking about the XL pipeline. We're talking about the larger questions of fossil fuel development and utilization. And in my case, I'm talking about how the rich are buying up all the available land in the world.
I'd like to throw something else into the mix here, and that is the argument that this pipeline would provide jobs is true. That is a true argument.
Yeah.
People really need jobs.
You could
jobs.
Build anything. You could build, right. You could build a big square of concrete 40 stories high, and it would provide jobs.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
Indeed. Yes, this would provide jobs at a time when people most desperately need jobs, but most of these would be temporary construction-related jobs that would exist until the pipeline is built, and then they would go away.
But if they build it badly, then there'll be breakage and there'll be new jobs.
Planned obsolescence in a giant pipeline?
Yeah.
God, I really hope you're not correct about that. Also, you could argue quite credibly that this pipeline would be a boon to cash-strapped state and local governments who really don't have enough money to provide the most basic of services right about now. However, in their haste to make sure that this job does, in fact, go through, for example, just to cite one example, the state of Kansas has already granted TransCanada an exemption from a number of state taxes, including property taxes.
Interesting.
For the first, I believe, 10 years that the pipeline is in operation, should it happen to be built.
Plus, they have the right of eminent domain, so they can go right through your farm.
Right. So this is estimated to cost the state of Kansas some $50 million in lost tax revenue.
Really?
Yeah. So you have a whole bunch of forces conspiring to make this thing take place when it is quite clearly a bad idea. And that's really an illustrative point when it comes to talking about how the forces of capitalism and profit have bought our entire mechanism of government.
Yeah, I'm glad you point that out directly, because I think a radical analysis, that is, an analysis of the roots of the problem, is extremely important. And this is a good test of Obama. It's also a good test of the sensibilities and sensitiveness of the American people. This really should not happen. Let's hear from our callers, 231-8187.
Who do we have? Nancy, good morning.
Hello, Joe. Hello. It's nice to hear your voice. You sound well.
Thank you.
I still have a great deal of difficulty getting my mind around the fact that there will be coal in Oregon. I can't conceive it.
There's already coal in Oregon.
What do you mean?
The Boardman plant provides most of the state's electricity. It is a coal-fired power plant.
Okay, that's right. Excuse me.
But you're talking about the new trains that will go...
The mining in Montana and hauling it over and putting it on the longest plane in the world, going through all those nice little towns and taking it to the coast and putting it on barges and taking it to China. Well...
Right.
It'll be dribbling coal all the way along. When it's on the ocean, some will fall in the ocean and wash back to the Oregon coast. And then when they do get the junk to China, it'll be going in the air and blowing back to us.
Yeah, no, there's no... Yeah, the ironies about it abound, and there's no question that it is filthy fuel. It is just another example of this sort of thing. The fact that they get into the tar sands in Alberta, and the fact that Canada has put so much of its economic effort on that is very important.
Yeah, I generally, usually pretty fiercely support the unions, but what the unions are saying about this one, say, hey, it's 2.5 years of really good jobs. Well, when you consider the long range, 2.5 years of good jobs for the union guys doesn't sound like much to me.
I think it goes to show desperation of the unions and the working class right about now.
I think they ought to be ashamed.
Okay, I really appreciate your call, Nancy. Thank you very much.
We've brought up the concept on the show a number of times about disaster capitalism.
Yeah.
How in the times of disaster or in times of desperation, capitalist solutions, often very temporary, very make-work solutions to these problems, are pushed through to the long-term detriment of the environment, to the working class, and everybody else. And I think this is one of those examples. There's a disaster of unemployment in this country, mm-hmm. such that even the very meager scraps that are being offered by TransCanada to workers in the Midwest along the route of this pipeline are being fought over.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that we ought to be able to come up with a better alternative.
Well, I mean, it is, to me, it is way past time to look at what an earlier caller brilliantly called star power. Mm-hmm. It is way past time for us to look at radical and reasonable solutions to the energy crisis. We now know global warming is real. We now know that there's an enormous crisis in the fisheries of the world. We now know that the poisoning of the atmosphere and of the land through the extraction process of coal and natural gas, and as in fracking, and of course oil, all bode ill for all animal kind. And how in the world can rational, wealthy people even continue to do what they're doing? It's just amazing to me. It's like you slice off a finger and say, hey, I saved my hand.
Star power is Brad Pitt running on a giant hamster wheel.
Okay, never mind.
503-231-8187. Laura, good morning.
Hey, you guys. I am actually visiting from Utah.
Oh, welcome.
Salt Lake City.
Uh-huh.
And it's really funny even just to hear what you just said about rational people realizing that the environment is really precariously balanced right now, and Utah is pretty, if I can say, butt backwards.
You can say that.
Governor is pretty out of control. He's trying to buy up a bunch of federal land to open to fracking, natural gas drilling, and now they're actually trying to start the first tar sands and oil shale drilling in Utah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up, and there's a beforeitstarts.org is one website, and then we're also in solidarity with Idle No More in Canada, so just just wanted to bring that all onto the open, and thanks for the show.
No, you can you give us those two sites again?
It's beforeitstarts.org and I don't know more, .org as well, I think. And we've, I mean, Utah is, it's so sad. It's really just depressing, almost living. I live in downtown, and we were rated worst air pollution in the country for the whole month of January.
Wow.
That's more of an issue with how we're situated in the mountains and stuff, but also, you know, we have Rio Tinto, which is one of the world's biggest copper mines, one of the seven wonders of the world you can see from space. That's about 25 miles west of the city. So, and, you know, we have a lot of nuclear waste, like, pretty much, I'm pretty convinced that the Mormons just are, like, think that there's going to be a new planet so they can do whatever the hell they want to this planet.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Mormon theology, but I really appreciate your call and telling us about Utah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, cheers, you guys.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, I don't know about Mormon theology either, just the underpants. That's about the extent of my knowledge.
Underpants.
The magic underpants.
Magic underpants. We're not going to go there. All right. We're talking about the XL pipeline. We're talking about the seizure of lands by the wealthy, the buying of lands all over the world by the wealthy, the destruction of the environment by the energy industry, and the whole process of extraction of these minerals and what it means to the world.
I would say that this is a really good example of how nation states, as we traditionally understand them, are no longer the repositories of ultimate political and economic power. Mm. I think that power has transitioned into the hands of the a small number of people we'll call the transnational ruling elite.
Okay.
A very small number of people who are on majority shares in these multinational corporations who do things like move crude oil across international borders. Case in point, Canada has made it known that they consider rejection of the Keystone XL project an unneighborly act on the part of the United States and have indicated that there might be retaliations.
Well, and they are a major trade partner.
Well, they are a major trade partner and a friendly democracy, one that shares the longest stretch of unguarded border in the world with us. Now, this is just madness to me. If there's anything that the people of Canada and the United States ought to make common cause about, it's the fact that this dirty, nasty, filthy oil should be left in the ground where it is, not dredged up and run through a dangerous pipeline south to the United States. It is a no-brainer. Yet the forces of transnational capitalism, this small number of the small ruling elite class, is able to dictate terms to both governments such that antagonistic international relations may be a result if this thing doesn't happen.
Well, it's interesting. You know, when I was a kid, way back in the mid-50s, C. Wright Mills, a professor at Columbia University, a sociologist, wrote a very careful analysis of power in America called The Power Elite.
Mm-hmm.
Another guy, Domhoff, wrote a similar and equally useful work later. All of these show that there was a ruling class, that it had absolute dominance of the economy and of the politics of the nation and therefore of the environment and so on. And we've known this for so long. And yet most of us are not taught that, and we are able to turn a blind eye to this terrible reality. What is always curious to me is how it can be that these vastly wealthy people, A, need more wealth, and B, don't seem to care about what happens to their children or their children's children.
No.
It's a puzzle.
I don't know. I think there's a rather simple explanation for it.
What's that?
We might call ourselves rational beings. We might call ourselves members of an advanced rational society. But at the end of the day, we're primates, and we all struggle for dominance in the pack. And those people who are near the top enjoy power on a scale that primates have never enjoyed before. Therefore, they're willing to sacrifice the health and well-being of future generations for the chance to get to the very top in their lifetime.
Oh, that's so depressing. You're right, though, I think.
Yeah, and the thing is, we're never going to be able to get rid of primate dominance dynamics. There's always going to be those people who want to be at the front of the pack, at the front of the herd, be the alpha male, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, they're monkeys. We're monkeys at the end of the day. Let's face it. So the best thing we can do, and I think one of the things that the modern democracies have been able to do to a large extent, putting aside the moment they've been bought and sold by transnational corporations, is take this drive to be at the top of the pack and split it out among a larger number of people so that ultimate power doesn't reside in one person.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to get depressed about this. What I'm going to say is if people sit on their hands in the face of what's happening, they're being foolish, and they're being foolish for themselves and for future generations.
They are, but they don't care.
Well, I'm not. I don't know.
Because they have a chance to grab the brass ring, so they're going to do it. Damn it! Then they'll be the biggest monkey on the block.
But the rest of us will be really the sub monkey. Sub monkey.
Sub monkey.
Non-dominant.
There's a great. There's a great band name for you, garage musicians.
Sub monkey.
All right. Who's next, Steve? Greg. Good morning.
Hey, morning. Got lots to talk about. I love renewable energy, and it's the other side of fossil fuels. Joe, I don't know if you've read that book yet about carbon-free, nuclear-free, but I told you a long time ago, so you got no excuses.
No, yeah. I appreciate your advice.
And also, people should read The Prize by Daniel Yergin so they can understand the oil industry a little better.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, too, is how solar is fairly democratic. I mean, anyone with some who can buy a new car could buy themselves a solar-powered system, and buy an electric car. They could. The solutions are there, I think, and people don't realize it. It's just that I think they're not aware of this. They're not educated, and I think that's why I have to always keep pounding on reading carbon-free, nuclear-free.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and I appreciate the call, man.
You know, this guy says the solutions it's doable by 2050.
Well, only if the will is there. And I'm really glad you remind us of the possibilities there are. In fact, you would think that capitalism would be very interested in creating the alternatives. But I also suspect that why bet on something that has less potential profit down the line, immediately down the line, than something that we know and the technologies we already have.
Right. Almost all the large oil companies, if you look into them, they have solar divisions. They have renewable energy.
Oh, yeah.
Divisions.
They even advertise that on TV.
Right. And they keep that fairly, quiet because they know that right now the profitability is still in oil, fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when the day comes, they'll have hedged their bets and they'll be all set to, use renewables to like gangbusters. You can just bet. When the fossil fuels peter out, they'll be ready.
No, I think you're right. I think it's a very selfish game they're playing, but I think it is real.
Right. So it's just a shift in profitability. So if you can take that profitability away by carbon tax or whatever it means, environmental tax, I think, you got some chance of a solution. Because if we're wrong about man-made global warming, we're still polluting ourselves to death.
Well, but we're not wrong. Let's be clear about this. Well, the evidence is pretty much there, man.
There's one other book you might want to read.
Yeah.
So, I don't know the author's name, but it's called The Chilling Star.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy states that the sun's magnetic influence on cosmic rays in our upper atmosphere, cosmic rays are responsible for cloud formation, which is responsible for the trapping of heat in our atmosphere.
Well,
it's very interesting.
Yeah, but you do understand, even if that were absolutely true, the contribution of burning fossil fuels and using fossil fuels the way we do would only increase that problem.
That's true. Maybe to a smaller degree, but...
Well, anyway,
So I think people should educate themselves instead of, just... it is an emotional issue when you're polluting and people are having problems because of it. My tips for the day, just read up and realize that there is a solution, a non-fossil fuel, non-nuclear solution to this whole mess.
I really appreciate the call. Thanks very much. All right, 231-8187. We're talking about the pipeline, the Trans-Canada, what the heck?
Keystone XL.
Keystone XL pipeline, which, as you pointed out, is simply a bigger pipe to join other pipes which already exist to move oil. And this tar sands oil at the extraction point in Alberta creates enormous pollution. Moving down through the United States, it creates potential for all kinds of disasters. Being shipped overseas to China, where it is burned and then comes back here as poisonous gases in the atmosphere. I mean, it's a multiple disaster waiting to happen, and we're going to have to see whether Obama has the courage to stay the course and say no.
Yeah, the Canadian government and TransCanada and the other oil companies involved in extraction up there want to dramatically increase their daily production, and they have a plan to do this clear through 2025. So if that continues, and if we continue to be a ready and viable market for that oil, as well as the rest of the international community, they will do that. And it will require not only the Keystone XL pipeline, but many more pipelines, probably leading to the Canadian West Coast and to the American West Coast to better service emerging Asian markets.
As we see with coal. And so, go ahead.
The plan is to burn every last drop of oil on the planet until we decide to do something different. And that is a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, and the other part of this, which I mentioned, and we'll do a show on it more extensively, the pattern of the purchase of all available land throughout the world by wealthy corporate interests, whether they're Chinese or British or American or whatever, doesn't really matter. The purchase of that land and the destruction of potential homelands for indigenous peoples and so on, and smaller nation states, is horrendous. And when you add the two together, you see the desperation of end state capitalism.
Yeah, it's true. In fact, you could really say without, and this is a pretty workable analogy, I think, that capitalism is really feudalism by another name, in which corporations and executive boards have replaced kings and capital has replaced land. Well, hasn't entirely replaced land. But it puts working people in much the same positions as serfs were, where we have to do homage to the job creators who deigned to give us the opportunity to earn a meager living, just as serfs were to be grateful for the landed nobles who allowed them to work a small portion of their land.
On the other hand, we get automobiles and color TVs and electric ranges.
Bread and circuses, man.
Yeah.
Bread and circuses. Who's next? Jessica, good morning.
Yeah. Hey, guys.
Hey.
I'm not going to be able to talk about the pipeline, but I want to talk about the coal train.
Okay.
I'm out there up in Skamania County. It's summer 2011, and Buffett's entourage lands on a piece of private property to shoot photographs of the gorge. What's he up to? He's got to get investors. Do we already have coal running through the gorge on the Washington side? Probably. And I just kind of wanted to share that. It's right on our porch, and I don't understand how we have all these entities in the gorge to protect the gorge, you know, to keep it pristine, because as private homeowners, we can't even choose the color of the paint we want to put on our house.
Ah, there's an irony.
I just want to put that out there, guys, and thank you for talking about the real shit, and will America...
Sorry. We had to let that one go. Who's next? Tyler, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, back to the solar issue. It seems like a good way to decentralize power in giving everyone solar.
Well, yeah. Houses. Yeah, in fact, there would be a lot of profit in it for quite a while.
And it is a good way to power our vehicles or our transportation.
What do you mean by creating rechargeable electric battery systems to operate personal vehicles?
Right.
Ah. Yeah, no, I agree with you, and I'm glad you remind us of that. There really are alternatives, and it is really an interesting phenomenon that capital will not turn to those alternatives in a massive way until they've exhausted the already known resource of fossil fuels.
I had another point, too. It seems like the media or the corporations set out to discredit solar before the coal trains or before the Keystone XL even came along.
No, you're right. And I think that there is really a peculiar kind of reactionary attitude on the part of the wealthy often. And this is what we're seeing in this massively, what I call end-state capitalism throughout the world. And, of course, nations like China will quickly buy into that. China, ironically, is producing enormous amounts of solar power, even as it exploits its own coal and oil and argues for control of the islands off of the coast of China so that it can do the disastrous undersea oil drilling. So there's a lot of irony in all of this. But we, who have to bear the brunt of it, all of us, really need to put up a heavy struggle. And I think we could win if people were more aware and really fought about it. But, you know, the media is really not reporting the stuff.
No.
Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
I do want to say, though, that making solar panels still takes an enormous amount of energy and water and mining to even make them. So.
No, that's true. There's no such thing as a free lunch. And I think it's important to understand that the technologies are in an early stage and will need to be developed much more thoroughly. Part of the reason why I think it hasn't happened is because it does take enormous resources to develop it.
Right. So we should power down first before we power up.
Well, I agree. I think we should, for example, have really well-insulated homes, and I think we should really explore alternative public transportation systems. I think we need a high-speed rail system because, in the end, the energy use is very much lower than traveling across the country in your little automobile.
Hey, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right.
And we need Angelina Jolie on an exercise bike. Star power.
What is with you and Angelina?
The star power thing is funny.
Oh, okay. All right.
503-231-8187.
I'm going to tell Brad on you.
Anita, good morning.
Good morning. I wondered, am I correct in this, that even if this tar sands pipeline is built all the way through the Keystone, mm-hmm. that the oil will be refined and then shipped to other places in the world and
mostly.
We won't even get it?
Yeah, mostly. Right. It'll depend on where the markets are located. But yes, the majority of it will go to other locations.
That's one. And two, I understand that the future most scarce resource will be clean water. And as you pointed out, this pipeline goes straight over the Ogallala off Aquifer.
Well, they part of the way to make it more palatable was in Nebraska and elsewhere. They're angling the pipe to be less over, over the Ogallala.
That thing is under. I don't know how many states. I don't see how in the world they could avoid.
Well, I don't either. But that's their claim.
Anyway, thank you very much for covering this.
Yeah, no, our pleasure, and thank you for the call. 231-8187, who's next? We're out of time.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. Fight the fight. Don't let the pipeline happen. Stop the coal trains, and so on. Stay tuned to KBOO.
We'll be back at you next week. Thanks.
Gareth from Music from the True Vine inviting you to Once in a Boo Moon, an evening of live music provided by KBOO DJs. My fellow Music from the True Vine hosts and I will be performing as the True Vine Ramblers and bringing you a great set of traditional bluegrass music. Other acts include Henry and Moggy doing some down-home ragtime and country, Don McLaren and his fiddlin' friends striking up some old-time fiddle tunes, and Noontime Jamboree host Retta Christie and her one-night stand band performing some swing. Once in a Boo Moon is on Saturday, February 23rd at St. David of Wales Episcopal Church from 7 to 10 p.m. Doors open at 6 p.m., so plan on arriving early, as ticket prices also include desserts with coffee or tea. There will also be a silent auction and raffle items to view. For full details, go to the KBOO website at kboo.fm. and click on Once in a Boo Moon under Coming Events. All proceeds...
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock. That cut off really oddly. Sorry about that. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, legendary MIT professor and author Noam Chomsky speaks on the threat of democracy. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints features the weekly report on occupied Palestine from Nora Barrows Friedman. We also hear a speech on the case of Bradley Manning with Kevin Gostola, author of Truth and Consequences, the U.S. versus Bradley Manning. At 11, Stage and Studio presents a Black History Month documentary special called Justice Denied, which focuses on African American history, including the fugitive slave trial of Anthony Burns. At 11:30 on Art Focus, host Joseph Gallivan interviews Modu Dieng and Devin A. Van Houten Maldonado. They are professor and student, respectively, at Pacific Northwest College of Art, and they have a show together at Linfield College in McMinnville. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous ongoing support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Now, here's Alternative Radio.
As far as policy goes, there have been very few surprises during the Arab Spring. It goes on pretty much as predicted, as always, and so does the rhetoric, which has nothing to do with what's happening. The outcomes, however, are a different matter. They're still quite uncertain. Well, one leading concern is to reduce what's regarded as the major threat, namely the threat of functioning democracy. In a functioning democracy, popular opinion will significantly influence policy. That's what democracy is supposed to mean. And that's extremely dangerous.
That's Noam Chomsky, and this is Alternative Radio. I'm David Barsamian. This edition of AR features Noam Chomsky, The Threat of Democracy. The U.S. is the self-proclaimed global champion of democracy, but the term is used selectively. Take Hillary Clinton, who was widely praised as an outstanding Secretary of State. At the height of the Tahrir Square uprising in Egypt, protesting Mubarak's 30-year dictatorship, she said, "No country has done more for democracy in Egypt than America." Mubarak for years was praised as an ally, a partner, and a moderate, and his regime was a force for stability. Washington backed him to the hilt, to the tune of billions of dollars of taxpayer money, much like the Shah, Marcos, Suharto, Ben Ali, and many others, until they too were overthrown. The media rarely report on these issues, and politicians and a mostly obedient